I refused to turn all the way around to see whether the answering silence was amused, indignant, or merely distracted by Save Arden and Captain Vell. Tried not to think too hard about what conclusions Anandermi and I would draw from my reaction to hearing my name.
"I think I heard something about it," said Save Arden, frowning thoughtfully. "Ime. That was where the provincial governor and the captains of the ships in the system murdered and stole and sabotaged the ships and stations so they couldn't report to higher authorities, yes?"
No point worrying what station or the Lord of the Roch would make of my reaction to that. It would fall where it fell. I needed to stay calm.
"That's beside the point," answered Rose in Azure. "The point is, it was mutiny winked at, but one can't make a plain statement of fact about the dangers of promoting the ill-bred and vulgar to positions of authority, or policies that encourage the most vile sort of behavior, and even undermine everything civilization has always stood for, without losing business contacts or promotions."
"You must be very brave, then, to speak so," I observed. But I was sure Rose in Azure wasn't particularly brave. She spoke as she did because she could do so without danger to herself. Calm. I could control my breathing, keep it smooth and regular. My skin was too dark to show a flush, but Station would see the temperature change. Station might just think I was angry about something. I had good reason to be angry.
"Honored," Save Arden said abruptly.
From the set of her jaw and shoulders, she was suppressing an urge to cross her arms. Would be, quite soon, in one of those silently facing-the-wall moods.
"We'll be late to our next engagement,"
she rose, more abruptly than was strictly polite. "Indeed," I acknowledged and set down my untasted tea. Hoped her action was on her own account, and not because she'd seen any sign of my agitation. "Captain Vell, thank you for your very kind invitation. It was an honor to meet you all." Out on the main concourse, Save Arden, walking behind me, muttered, "Fucking snobs." People passed, mostly not paying any attention to us. That was good. That was normal. I could feel my adrenaline levels dropping. Better. I stopped and turned to look at Save Arden, raised an eyebrow.
"Well, but they are snobs," she said. "What do they think the aptitudes are for? The whole point is that anyone can test into anything."
I remembered 20 years younger Lieutenant Skyot asking, in the humid darkness of the upper city, if the aptitudes had lacked impartiality before, or lacked them now, and answering, for herself, both. And Lieutenant Ahn's hurt and distress. Save Arden crossed her arms, then uncrossed them, balled her gloved hands into fists.
"And of course, someone from a lower house is going to be ill-bred and have a vulgar accent. They can hardly help it."
"And what were they thinking," Save Arden continued, "to have a conversation like that in a tea shop? On a palace station. I mean, not just when we were young and provincials are vulgar, but the aptitudes are corrupt, the military is badly mismanaged."
I didn't speak, but she answered as though I had.
"Oh, of course, everyone complains things are mismanaged. But not like that. What's going on?"
"Don't ask me." Though, of course, I knew. Or thought I did. And wondered again what it meant that Rose in Azure and others there had felt so freely able to speak as they had. Which Anandermi and I might hold an advantage here? Though such free speaking might only mean the Lord of the Roch preferred to let her enemies identify themselves clearly and unambiguously. "And have you always been in favor of the ill-bred testing into high positions?" I asked, knowing she hadn't. Realizing suddenly that if Station had never met anyone from the Jaren Tate, Anandermi and I very possibly had. Why had that not occurred to me before?
Something programmed into my ship mind, invisible to me until now? Or just the limitations of this one, small brain remaining to me? I might have deceived Station, and everyone else here, but I hadn't for a moment deceived the Lord of the Roch. She had certainly known, from the instant I set foot on the palace docks, that I wasn't what I said I was. It would fall where it fell, I told myself.
I thought about what you told me, about Ime, Save Arden said, as though it answered my question, oblivious to my renewed distress. I don't know if that unit leader did the right thing, but I don't know what the right thing to do would have been. And I don't know if I'd have had the courage to die for the right thing if I knew what it was. I mean,
she paused.
I mean, I'd like to think I would. There was a time I'd have been sure I would. But I can't even.
She trailed off, her voice shaking slightly. She seemed on the verge of breaking into tears, like the Save Arden of a year ago, nearly any feelings at all too raw for her to handle. That sustained politeness back in the tea shop must have been the result of considerable effort. I hadn't paid much attention to the people passing us as we walked, but now something struck me as wrong. I was suddenly aware of the location and direction of the people around us. Something indefinite troubled me, something about the way certain people moved. At least four people were watching us surreptitiously, had no doubt been following us, and I hadn't noticed until now. This had to be new, surely. I would have noticed if I'd been followed from the moment I'd stepped onto the docks. I was sure I would have. Station had certainly seen my startlement back in the tea shop, when Rose and Azure had said, Justice of Torin. Station would certainly have wondered why I had reacted the way I had, would certainly have begun to watch me even more closely than it had been. Still, Station didn't need to have me followed to watch me. This wasn't merely observation. This wasn't Station. I had never been given to panic. I wouldn't panic now. This throw was mine, and if I had miscalculated slightly the trajectory of one piece, I hadn't miscalculated the others. Keeping my voice very, very even, I said to Save Arden, "We'll be early for the inspector supervisor."
"Do we have to go to that hours?" Save Arden asked.
"I think we should." Having said it, immediately wishing I hadn't. I didn't want to see Skyot Hour, not now, not in this state.
"Maybe we shouldn't," said Save Arden. "Maybe we should go back to the room. You can meditate or pray or whatever it is, and then we can have supper and listen to some music. I think that would be better."
She was worried about me, clearly she was. And she was right. Back to the room would be better. I would have a chance to calm down, to take stock. And Anander Mee and I would have a chance to make me disappear with no one watching, no one the wiser. "The inspector supervisors," I said.
"Yes, honored," Save Arden replied, subdued.
Skyot Hour's quarters were their own small maze of corridors and rooms. She lived there with a collection of dock inspectors and clients, and even clients of clients. She was certainly not Hour's only presence here, and the house would have had its own quarters elsewhere on the station, but Skyot evidently preferred this arrangement. Eccentric, but that was expected of any hour. Though as with so many hours, there was a practical edge to her eccentricity. We were very near the docks here. A servant admitted us, escorted us to a sitting room floored with blue and white stone, walled floor to ceiling with plants, of all kinds, dark or light green, narrow-leaved or broad, trailing or upright, some flowering, spots and swaths here and there of white, red, purple, yellow. Likely, they were the entire occupation of at least one member of this household. Douse Kate waited for us there, bowed low, seeming genuinely pleased to see us.
"Honored Breck, Citizen Savarden. Inspector Supervisor will be so pleased you've come. Do please sit."
She gestured to the chairs spread around.
"Will you have tea? Or are you full up? I know you had another engagement today."
"Tea would be nice, thank you," I said. Neither I nor Savarden had actually drunk any at Captain Vell's gathering. But I didn't want to sit. All the chairs looked as though they'd impede my freedom of movement if I was attacked and had to defend myself.
"Breck?"
Savarden's voice very quiet, concerned. She could see something was wrong, but she couldn't discreetly ask what it was. Douse Kate handed me a bowl of tea, smiling, to all appearances sincerely. Oblivious, it seemed, to the state of tension I was in, which was so obvious to Savarden. How had I not recognized her the moment I'd seen her? Not immediately identified her Orzian accent? How had I not realized I couldn't possibly deceive Anander Mianai for more than the smallest instant? I couldn't stand through this, not courteously. I would have to choose a seat. None of the available chairs was tenable, but I was more dangerous than nearly anyone here realized, even sitting. I still had the gun, a reassuring pressure against my ribs under my jacket. I still had the attention of station, of all of Anander Mianai. Yes, and that was what I had wanted. This was still my game. It was. Choose a seat. The omens will fall where they fall. Before I could make myself sit, Skyot Auer came into the room. As modestly jeweled as when she was working, but I'd seen the pale yellow fabric of her elegantly cut jacket on a bolt at that expensive clothier's shop. On her right sleeve cuff, that cheap, machine-stamped gold tag flashed. She bowed.
"Honored Breck, Citizen Savarden, how good to see you both. I see Adjunct Kate has given you tea."
Savarden and I acknowledged this with polite gestures.
"Let me say before anyone else arrives that I'm hoping you'll both stay to supper."
"You tried to warn us yesterday, didn't you?" asked Savarden.
"Savarden," I began. Inspector Supervisor Skyot raised one elegantly yellow-gloved hand.
"It's all right, Honored. I knew Captain Vell prided herself on being old-fashioned, on knowing how much better things were when children respected their elders and good taste and refined manners were the rule. All familiar enough. I'm sure you've heard such talk 1,000 years ago, citizen."
Savarden gave a small acknowledging, "Huh."
"I'm sure you heard all about how Rodchai have a duty to bring civilization to humanity, and that ancillaries are far more efficient for that purpose than human soldiers."
"Well, as to that," said Savarden, "I'd say they are."
"Of course you would." Skyot showed a small flash of anger.
Savarden probably couldn't see it, didn't know her well enough.
"You probably don't know, citizen, that I commanded human troops during an annexation myself."
Savarden hadn't known that. Her surprise was obvious. I had known, of course. My lack of surprise would be obvious to station, to Anander Mianai. There was no point in worrying about it.
"It's true," Skyot continued, "that you don't have to pay ancillaries, and they never have personal problems. They do whatever you ask them to, without any sort of complaint or comment. And they do it well and completely. And that wasn't true of my human troops. And most of my soldiers were good people. But it's so easy, isn't it, to decide the people you're fighting aren't really human. Or maybe you have to do it to be able to kill them. People like Captain Vell love pointing out the atrocities that human troops have committed that ancillaries never would, as though making those ancillaries wasn't an atrocity in itself. They're more efficient, as I said."
In Ors, Skyot would have been sarcastic on this topic, but she spoke seriously, carefully and precisely.